We're holding the last line of Samach Dalet Amud Beis. We learned in the Gemara yesterday about that if a person has drunk wine, if a person has drunk a revius of wine, they're not allowed to daven. Or we had a different girsa that the Rif and that the Rif and some other Rishonim hold that he's not. Sorry, actually, we had the girsa that we have in front of us, which Tosfos prefers, is that a person who drank a revius or more is not allowed to paskin halacha. And we brought also there's a girsa that the Rif and some other Rishonim have that he's not allowed to daven either. So now we're going to talk more about this idea of a person being drunk and not davening, and more on that topic of when it's appropriate to daven and to learn Torah. So we should mention at the beginning. I mentioned yesterday in Shulchan Aruch, it points out nowadays, and nowadays doesn't just mean nowadays, it goes back all the way to the times of the Rishonim. First of all, really, we don't daven with the same level of kavana anyhow, so there's less excuse to say I'm potter from tefillah because I'm drunk or whatever, unless a person is really drunk. But just if he drank a little bit, first of all, our wines are not as strong as the wines they had in those days. We anyway don't daven with as much kavana as they did nowadays. We anyway daven from a siddur, so therefore a person drank a little bit is not really an excuse to not daven. So the Gemara starts off, Amar of Sheshes Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Mishum, by the way, in the Gemara doesn't mean that he heard it from him directly. Rav Sheshes is one of the Amiroyim. Rav Elazar ben Azariah is a Tana from the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni. Rav Sheshes lived about 200 years after him, so he didn't hear it directly from him. Mishum, that he means that he heard from someone who heard. Eventually, it goes back to Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Anyway, he says, Yochol ani lifter es kol ha'olam kulay min ha'din. I would be able to find a reason to patter the entire Jewish people. In other words, I'd be able to find an argument to use for Hashem, to use in front of Hashem, to patter the entire Jewish people from harsh punishment, from judgment for what they're doing wrong, miyom shechorav beis hamikdash v'ad achshav, from when the beis hamikdash was destroyed until now. Which is the time of Golos. Shenema, because you have a pasuk that describes the condition of the Jewish people in Golos. The Navi says to the Jewish people, Lochen shimi na zois ania. Listen to this now, the Nevuos of Geula that the Navi is saying. Listen to this now, you poor one. Ushchuras v'loy miyoyin. You are drunk, but not from wine. In other words, we're in effect in Golos, we're drunk and then confused because of the troubles of Golos. So a drunk person is not fully responsible for what they do. So the same way, he could argue to Hashem that we Jewish people in Golos are not fully responsible for what we're doing wrong because we're drunk and confused and stunned by the troubles of Golos. In fact, Marashah points out that we're saying that anio shchuras v'lo miyoyin, as if you have a rich person who's used to drinking wine, and then you have a poor person who's not used to drinking at all, and therefore they drink a little bit, and it has a bad effect on them. We Jewish people are like the second category, like we're not even used to this kind of wine of stunning of wine that puts us into a stupor. So the Gemara says, Maisvi, I have a contradiction. What do you mean that would be a reason to patter the Jewish people from judgment and punishment for all their Averis? We learn in a Braisa, Shikar Mekha Mekach, a drunk person, his buying is considered buying. In other words, if while a person is drunk, he buys something, it's still valid lahalacha, just as if he was sober. Or Memkare Mimker, if he sells something, it's considered sold in halacha. He can't say, I was drunk, I didn't know what I'm doing. And over aveda sheyesh b'misah m'misinoi. So if he's over while he's drunk, and an aveda that's chayev misa, and of course they gave him asra, etc., then they still put him to death. And the fact that he was under the influence doesn't help. Malkus malkinoi. Say if he did something that makes him chayev malkus, then they give him malkus. In other words, the fact that in all those cases, the fact that he was drunk doesn't make him potter for anything that he did. Klola shel davar. The general rule is harei ukipikeach l'chol dvarav. A person who is drunk is considered like a sober person for all purposes. Elisha Potter min atfila. The only thing is, as we said before, he's Potter from davening, because davening you're standing lifnei amelech, and you need to be in a frame of mind. You need to be capable as we said before, being able to talk coherently in front of the king. So what are you telling me, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rav Sheshes, that with this excuse of Shchuras v'lo miyoyin, you could patur the Jewish people from punishment for all their averus? We see from this braisa that a drunk person is not in fact patur from what he does. The Gemara says, you're right. My Yecholni lifted to Ka'amonami. You're right. When he says, I could patur the Jewish people from punishment, he means midin tefillah. He doesn't mean din in general for judgment for all the averus they did. Primarily, he means the din that a person might be judged. Why didn't you daven b'kavana? So he can use as an excuse because we're shchuras v'loy miyoy. There are a couple of things on that. One of them is the Chidah points out, so why taka did he use the expression to begin with min hadin? And the reason is because one of the things, what helps a person in general with his Yetzirah to not do Averis is when he davens. He davens to Hashem to help him against the Yetzirah. Like we say in morning brachas, so if a person is not able to daven properly, then it has an effect on the whole rest of their day, and they're more susceptible to do other kinds of Averis as well. So as the Braise is telling us, doesn't pater a person from that, the fact that he's drunk from the stupefying effects of Golos, but it has a certain effect on that also. Rav Sheshes and Rav Elazar ben Azariah can still argue on our behalf that if we had been able to daven properly, then that itself would have given us a great boost as far as other Averis as well. We actually said on the previous daf that a person who davens while he's shikur is actually tefillah te'eva. His tefillah is considered disgusting in front of Hashem. But the difference is the Rifan Ein Yaakov says, you know, come on, that's when a person is drunk on wine and that drunkenness and that stupefying effect is going to go away soon. It doesn't apply in the same way when a person is drunk on golos, which is a long-term thing, unfortunately. There you can't say that tefillah te'eva. We're saying there's a person should still try to daven as best as possible, but if he can't, then we have this built-in excuse. Okay, the Gemara says, Amar Rav Chanina, so on this that we're saying that a drunk person, what he buys is considered buying, what he sells is considered selling, etc. So Rav Chanina says, Lo shanu ela shalei gia l'shichrusei shaloit. Now that applies only if a person did not reach the level of drunkenness of Loit, where we know, you know, Loit, what happened, Loit got dead drunk, and he didn't know anything that was going on with him at all. V'lo yada b'shichfo. But if a person reaches the level of drunkenness of loit, potter miklum, then he's potter from all of them. Then at that point, he's considered like a shoyte until he sobers up. So if he buys something that's not considered buying, sells is not considered selling, he certainly can't daven during that time, etc. And generally, he's potter from all the mitzvahs until he sobers up. Okay. More on this topic. Amar Rav Chanina, kol ha-mefik mogein b'shas gaiva, anyone who removes mogein during a time of gaiva, and the reason why he's using such an odd expression is because he's basing himself on a pasuk that we're going to quote the pasuk on the next line. There's a lot of different explanations what exactly Rav Chanina means. Rashi explains it's a continuation of what we said. Mefik means he removes. Mogein means shmina esrei, because the first bracha of it ends with mogein Avraham. Bishas gaiva, at a time of gaiva, namely when he's drunk, where you know that when a person is drunk, a lot of times they feel more gaivadic, they feel more they feel prouder and more gaivadic than they otherwise would when they're sober. That's Rashi's explanation. Tosfos gives a different explanation that it has nothing to do directly with what we were talking about. Drunkenness, it's talking about that Mishas Gaiva means exactly what it sounds like. When the Yetzahara is feeling Gaivadik and ready to get a person to do Averus. So Mefik Mogen means that he removes that and covers up that Yetzahara and prevents it from overpowering him. And there's a half a dozen other explanations of this line from different other Rishonim. Refers to the Ravid explains that Bishas Mogin refers to when a person is tired, so Rav Chanina is saying if a person doesn't daven when he's tired, but rather sleeps a little bit in order to feel more alert so that he can daven properly, etc. There's a bunch of different explanations. Anyway, Sogrin v'choismin sore spadoi. The Hashem hides away. Hashem closes up and seals up tsoros from affecting him. So in the schus of that he does the right thing, that he doesn't daven when he's drunk, or that he controls his yetzahara, or that he doesn't daven when he's falling asleep, etc., etc. So Hashem saves tzaros. So Hashem prevents tzaros from coming on him. Shenema, our pasuk in Iyov says, "Gava afike maginim." The simple meaning of the pasuk, "Gava," the pride of the Levyasan, "Afike maginim," is because of the rows of protective scales that he has. Sogu choisem tsar, they're closed and sealed up narrowly together. In other words, he has overlapping scales that protect him. But the Gemara is darshaning the word "gava" means. Again, it means gaiva, so either it means drunkenness or sleep or the yetzahara, etc. Afike, the Gemara is going to explain in a second, means to remove. Maginim, meloshen magen, again meloshen magen Avraham, or meloshen magen, that he covers up and defends himself against the yetzahara, etc. And then the pasuk continues, sogur choisam tsar, so those closed sogur choisam and sealed up tsar tsarists that don't come on him. So the key word then is we need to know how afike comes to mean removing. My mashma dahai afik lishna da avurihu. Where do we see the word afike or afik means to remove something? So shenem dichtiv, because you have another pasuk in Iyov earlier in Sefer Iyov. Iyov is complaining, "You guys are my friends, Sofar and Bildad and Eliphaz. You guys came supposedly to be menachem over me after all the troubles that I had, and now you're accusing me of averus and so forth." So he says, "Achai bogdu k'may nachal." My brothers, meaning you, my friends, have betrayed me like a stream. Like, in other words, you imagine you have a stream which is only seasonal. So you come there out of season, and you come there and you come there during the hot season, and you expect to find a stream of water there. And it's dry. Kafik necholam ya'avodu. They go away like the stream bed of the stream. So we see that the word afik means something that's removed. Like he's saying, like, I expected to find good water over there. I expected that you guys would help me feel better. And now instead you're turning against me. So we see that the word afik is something that you expected to be there and is not. So therefore, that's what Reb Chanina means then, that he's mefik mogen, he's removing mogen, b'shas gaiva, at a time when he's feeling gaiva. So again, that he doesn't daven at that time, but waits until he sobers up, or that he controls his yetzahara rather than letting it control him, or that he goes to sleep so that he'll be able to daven with a clearer head, etc. Rabbi Yochanan says the same thing, or almost the same thing, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, but with the Lashon the other way around. Kol she'enoy mefik itmar. The proper way of phrasing it is, if he's not mefik, because as the Gemara is going to explain, Rabbi Yochanan holds that the word mefik means the opposite of what Rabbi Chanina said. It doesn't mean to remove, it means to uncover. So therefore, it means just the opposite. If he doesn't uncover his davening when he's gaivadik, when he's drunk, in other words, he waits with davening until he sobers up, or that he doesn't cover up his yetzahara, but he actually goes to open war against it, or that he overcomes his tiredness and davens, etc. So that would be the proper thing. Then Hashem takes away tzaras from him. By the way, Ben Yehoyada says an interesting thing. If we say that this is referring to, like Rashi says, where he doesn't daven when he's drunk, then why does he get the reward for that? That's sosman v'chosman tzaras bad. Why such a great reward for the fact that he doesn't daven when he's drunk? And he explains, basically, because sometimes we all know certain kinds of people where there are certain things they're not able to say when they're sober, but they're able to say them more when they're drunk. That in a certain sense, that's the idea behind drinking at Chassidus Fabrengen, is it removes a little bit of your inhibitions, and then you're more willing to say something to a fellow chassid to get him on the straight path in avoda, which you might feel inhibited when you're sober. So the point is, he says, therefore, so the wine or whatever it is that you drank serves as kind of a go-between you and the other person. It makes it that here you wouldn't have been able to say this, and now as a result of that, so you're able to. So in effect, if a person davens when he's drunk, says Ben Yoyada, then it amounts to he's making the wine like an intermediary between himself and Hashem. So therefore, so not necessarily our tzaras kept away from him, because he's davening through an intermediary. But if you daven directly to Hashem, then his reward is that Hashem takes away tzaras from him. So Rabbi Yochanan again is saying, Kol she'enim mefik itmar. So my mashma dahai mefik lishna de galuyehu. So where do we see, according to Rabbi Yochanan, who's saying that the lashon is that he should be mefik, that he should be revealing that he should be revealing Mog in. In other words, he say that, or that he shouldn't, that he shouldn't be revealing Mog in, that he shouldn't be davening at a time like that when he's drunk. So where do we see that the word mefit can mean to reveal? Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Tehillim, vayero afike mayim, the stream beds of the water were seen, vayigolo moistes tevel, the foundations of the earth were uncovered. This is talking about Kriyas Yamsuf. So we see that the word afik, the word afik, then a stream bed, can refer to something which is uncovered, like it was uncovered by Kriyas Yamsuf. Okay, so the Gemara says mechti. Now let's consider, after all, what's the kroy mashma bein lamar bein lamar? Both Rav Chanina and Rav Yechanan have psukim that show that the word afik can mean what they want it to mean. Rav Chanina has a pasuk kafik necholim ya'avodu, that means that afik is something that is gone where you expect it to be. Rav Yechanan says the other way around, that afik means something uncovered, where you didn't know it was there and now it's uncovered. So, and both of them are saying in effect the same thing, that you shouldn't daven while you're drunk, or that you shouldn't, that, or that you should be controlling and fighting against your Yetzihara, or that you shouldn't, or that you shouldn't be davening when you're sleepy, etc., etc. So, my benayu. So, why, what forces that, what's the practical difference between them that they're giving two different explanations? So, the answer is, ikubenayu did have. Yeah.
Why do we focus on a word afik when we have the direct source in Torah, the sons of Aaron, who passed away because they were drunk, or at least according to
not such a direct,
that explanation?
Well, one second. I agree with the question, but the answer is it's not such a direct source. The pasuk doesn't explicitly say that they were drunk. One of the drushes in the Medrash, why they were punished for what they did, is because they were drunk, because after that, right after that, you have the mitzvah that Hashem tells Aaron that the Kohenim are not allowed to be drunk while they're doing the avodah. But you should realize, avodah is something else. In fact, actually, the Alter Rebbe talks about in Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchos Birkas Kohenim. Now, we know a Kohen is not allowed to duchen when he's drunk either, which is why Simchas Torah in the morning, we do duchening in the morning in Shacharis rather than in Musaf, because by Musaf, everybody has drunk by the Kiddush. But the Alter Rebbe points out that, after all, that we don't say, you know, we have certain kulis over there. The point is that he's not supposed to be drinking. The point is he's not supposed to be duchening while he's drunk. But there, it really only applies to wine, as opposed to, for example, what we're talking about over here in the Gemara would apply not only to wine but also to mashke and beer and other kinds of things that intoxicate you. So you could argue the case of Aaron's sons, where they're doing avodah, fine, that's a special case. Maybe they're not supposed to be drunk there. And again, even that, it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk. But here we're talking about davening, or we're talking about controlling one's yetzahara. So it's something else altogether. So we have a different pasuk for it.
Tefillah is very close to avodah. It's on the same level.
It's still not the same thing. When it comes, again, the difference is that, for example, when it comes to davening Shemoneh Esrei, if a person is drunk by any kind of intoxicating thing, then he's not supposed to daven until he sobers up. As opposed to with Birkas Kohanim, it's really only if he drank a revius of wine. Technically, I mean, nowadays, you know, you have so many people make Kiddush on Simchas Torah, on Mashke. Technically, according to that, the Kohenim would be able to duchen by Musaf. We don't. I mean, the Minhag is already established to do it by Shacharis, but still, you know, with Birkas Kohenim, it's not so much being drunk, it's having drunk wine specifically. All right, let's get back to the Gemara anyway. So the Gemara asked anyway, my Beidayu, what's the practical difference between Rabbi Chanina's and Rabbi Yechanan's ways of stating? They seem to be saying the same thing. They're just explaining the word afik or mafik differently. So what's the practical difference between them? And the answer is ikabinayu of sheshes. They would argue whether we can do like Rav Sheshes did. Rav Sheshes moso shinte l'shame. Rav Sheshes would give over his sleep to his Mesharis. In other words, he would tell him, I'm going to sleep a little bit now. When it comes time for davening, wake me up. So Rashi explains then, Rav Chanina, who's saying that kol ha-mefik mogen, and he understands mefik to mean removing, that you're not allowed to daven as long as you're still feeling the effect of the wine. So Rav Chanina would say, it's not good enough that you have somebody else wake you up. It has to be that you yourself wake up after the effect of the wine. So according to him, Rav Sheshes' method wouldn't work because you still have the Meshores is waking him up when it's time for davening, but that doesn't help. He may not, all the effect of the wine may not have dissipated yet. Whereas Mar Isle did have sheshes, or Mar Lesle did have sheshes, whereas Rabbi Yochanan would be fine with that. Rabbi Yochanan would say that kol she'enei mefik itmar, that if a person doesn't reveal and daven his tefillah while he's drunk, so fine. In other words, but even if he has somebody else wake him on a certain schedule, that's fine because at least he slept and that got rid of enough of the effect of the wine that there's no problem. Again, according to the other explanations about what Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Yochanan meant in the first place, then the meaning of the Gemara here, over here is going to be a little bit different. According to Rabbeinu Hananel and Tosfos, again, we were talking about that a person controls his Yetzirah, or a person fights against his Yetzirah, again, at a time when he's feeling drunk. So Rabbi Chanina says the best thing to do then is go to sleep, and that way you'll dissipate that Yetzirah. If that means that you're going to miss the time of davening, so be it. Don't have somebody else wake you up. Wait until you're able to wake up on your own. Rabbi Yochanan says the problem is then you may not end up davening at all. So therefore, you can have somebody else wake you up, and then, for example, go walking or something, and then that'll finish getting rid of the effect of it, and then you'll be able to daven. If we say that B'shas Gaiva, as the Ravid says, means when you're sleepy, then it means that Rav Chanina and Rav Yechanan are arguing, if a person is feeling sleepy, what should he do? Should he tell somebody else, wake me up in time for davening and go to sleep so he'll be able to daven with a clearer head? Or should he power through and daven even though right now he's feeling sleepy and then overpower his sleepiness and only then go to sleep because otherwise he might miss the time of davening? We have, according to that explanation, by the way, we have every year Shavuos, we have that dilemma. Should we, after having stayed up all night until Alois HaShachar and we're feeling a little muddled, should we daven now or should we go to sleep a couple of hours and then wake up in time for davening? So according to the Ravid, essentially that's the machlokes between Rav Chanina and Rav Yechanan over here. Okay. More on this topic of what frame of mind daven in. Amar of Chiya Ba'ashi, Amar of Chiya Ba'ashi Amar Rav, Kol She'en Daitim Yosheves Olav Al Yispalal. A person whose mind is not at ease shouldn't daven. Mishum She'nemar Batsar Al Yoyre. Because the Pasuk says, in trouble, he should not be Yoyre. The word Yoda literally means to give a decision in halacha, but it also means to daven. Now the problem with that is there is no such pasuk. So Rashi says, okay, maybe it's actually from Sefer Ben Sira. Sefer Ben Sira, we've talked about before, is a sefer that was written very early in the time of the second Beis Mikdash. There's sources that say that the author was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Anyway, the point is, it's written in a very poetic style. It's not one of the Sfarim of Tanakh. The Gemara discusses in various places, that in particular in Sanhedrin, the pros and cons of it. The Gemara ends up saying over there, it's not written with Ruach HaKodesh. Don't confuse it with any of the Sfarim of Tanakh. There are, in fact, some silly things in it, but nevertheless, there are good things in it as well, and you can dash in them. So there are a few places in Shas where the Gemara quotes things from it as if they were psukim, like it does over here, Shenemar. As if it was a pasuk. So Rashi is not sure that it's from Sefer Ben Sira, but he says maybe. In fact, in Rashi's times, they didn't have the Lashon Kodesh original of Sefer Ben Sira. That had long since been lost, and all they had was a Greek translation of it. But eventually they found the Hebrew original of it in the Cairo Geniza, and sure enough, they found such a pasuk in it. With that said, though, Tosfos says that there are actually some psukim in Tanakh that express the same idea, one of them being the pasuk that we quoted at the beginning of the Amud about that you're drunk but not from wine, implying, in other words, that that's not a proper frame of mind to daven in, like we said at the top of the Amud. And Tosfos brings another pasuk from Iyov that also expresses the same idea but in different words. Anyway, so that's the idea. When a person is not in a calm frame of mind, he should not daven. Again, going back to what we said before, and Shulchan Aruch explains, based on the Ritva and Trumas Adeshin and other Rishonim, that applied in their times when they daven with much more kavana. Nowadays, we don't daven with such kavana anyway. That's not a valid reason to avoid davening. So the Gemara continues. Rav Chanina b'yomer de rosach le matzli. Rav Chanina, in fact, on a day when he got angry, wouldn't daven. Omar, because he said, Batsar al Yoriksiv, as we just quoted. It says, don't daven when you're feeling in trouble. And now, on a day that he got angry, is a day that he's feeling troubled, and therefore he's not in the frame of mind for davening. Although Ben Yoyada says maybe that's not talking about the regular three daily tefillos, shachris, mincha, and ma'ariv. Maybe that's only talking about in those times it was common to daven a tefillos nedava, so maybe he wouldn't do that when he's angry. Similarly, the Gemara says, ma'ukva b'yom d'shusa lo yhaven nafik l'bei dina. Ma'ukva was a dayan on a day when the south wind was on the day when the south wind was blowing, and it was a very hot, dry, strong wind. Then he wouldn't go to the Beis Din to judge cases, because again, when the weather is like that, then you're not in a good frame of mind to be able to paskin halacha. Amar of Nachum Yitzchok, and Rav Nachum Yitzchok says, Hilchasa boyatzilusa ki yoma de'istira, to learn halacha requires a clear head like the kind that you have on a day when the north wind blows. The north wind, Rashi explains from other Gemaras, is a dead. The north wind is a gentle wind. Everybody likes it. It dissipates the clouds, etc. So that's the kind of frame of mind you should be in properly in order to learn halachas, is a calm frame of mind like that. Omer Abaya says in this connection, to give an idea how single-minded you have to be concentrating on learning Torah when you're learning. If my mother, which actually means his foster mother, because his mother passed away in childbirth, if she would tell me, pass the kutach, or kutach is a dip like sour cream that they used to use in those days for the food, that would distract me to the extent that loy tanoi, I wouldn't be able to learn Torah properly like I was before. Because even a minor thing like that, Rashi says, even a minor thing like that, like pass over the kutach, that would be enough to distract me and be mevatel me that I wouldn't be able to learn Torah with the same single-minded intensity as before. There are mafoshim that explain that this is talking about when you're starting to learn, that a little distraction like that can easily throw you off. Once you're into learning, we know it says in Pirkei Avos, "Pas melach toichel amayim v'masura tishta v'chayet tzar tichya." So then nothing should be allowed to distract the person from learning. But Abaye is saying at the beginning, when you're starting out learning for the day, you need to make sure that there are no distractions. Similarly, Omar Rava ikrastan kina loytanoi. Rava says, If a louse bites me, then the same thing, it would throw me off and it would distract me, then I wouldn't be able to learn Torah as well. It could be, I haven't seen this anywhere, but both of them are saying loy tanoi, which implies learning Mishnayos and Braises. Maybe what they're saying is when it comes to learning Gemara, when it comes to the Svaras of Gemara, that no problem. There can be some minor distractions like that and they won't distract you because you're fartift in learning. But when we're talking about Mishnayos and Braises, where every word of them is significant, and you can learn halachas from the detailed words of them, then it's not your own svaras, it's what was handed down to you by your rebbeim, and you need to make sure to learn it exactly. Then you need to have without any distractions at all. Okay. So in this connection about the lice, the Gemara says, Ma Brei D'Ravina Avdala Ime Zayin Moni L'Zayin Yoimi. Ma Brei D'Ravina's mother made for him 7 sets of clothes for the 7 days of the week. This way, in other words, he could change his clothes every day, and that way his clothes are not going to develop lice in them. Because again, she held, like Rava, that if he gets bitten by lice, it's going to distract him from learning. So she made sure that he had a fresh set of clothes every day, and then she'd wash them. So this way he doesn't have any troubles with lice, and this way he can learn with full concentration. Okay. More on this topic of when the proper time is to learn. Amr of Yehuda, lo ivri leila ela lashinsa. The Rabbi Yehuda says the night was created only for sleeping. Now, it doesn't mean that a person should be sleeping all night and not learning at night at all. Rashi Tosfos says that it's talking about the nights of Tkufas Tammuz. The nights then during that time of year are short anyway. If you're going to try to stay up learning in them, you're anyway not going to have as much time because it's a shorter night. So then those are the nights when you should be sleeping, as opposed to the other times of the year when the nights are longer, then you should be spending at least a certain amount of time of them learning Torah. Marsha explains differently. It means to begin with, the night was created in order to sleep. But afterwards, we know, this week's parasha and parashas Bereishis, that you had Shnei Amoris Agdolim, and then Hashem set up that you're going to have Amor HaKotan L'Mamshelos B'Laila, the moon is gonna have the domain by night. So now already Hashem gives you light on certain nights, not every night. Some nights you don't have a moon, and some nights you don't have a moon. So fine, those nights you don't have the moon, you don't have any artificial light, let's say. So then fine, you can sleep. But if you have the moon available or you have artificial light, then you should be learning Torah by night and not just sleeping. In fact, the Rambam puts it in Hilchos Talmud Torah that how does a person earn Keser Torah, the crown of Torah, is by not wasting his nights and using them properly for learning. So in this connection, Amar Rav Shimon ben Lakish, Ivri Sihara Ela Lagirsa, the moon was created only for us to be able to learn Torah by. So again, Marsha says it's not a contradiction to the previous. So according to Tosfos, what we're saying is you have the short nights when you should sleep versus the longer nights when you have the moon, and therefore you should be spending time learning. According to Marsha, the vort is when the moon is out. When Hashem created the moon for this purpose, so when the moon is out and you have moonlight to learn by, then you should be doing that. When not, when you don't have moonlight, or the way the original plan was before the moon was made into the Marah Katan, then the night was designed for sleeping. There's many other different explanations of it. Also, one of them being that if a person is tired, better he should be sleeping by night rather than he should be sleeping by day, because the day, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, is really the time that he should be spending working or working and or learning Torah. So in this connection, Amri Leila Reb Zera Mechadad on Shmaitach, they told Reb Zera, people one time said to Reb Zera, your teachings in Torah are very, very sharp. Amalahu, so he says to them, that is because the Yimami Ninu. That's because I learned those things during the daytime when I was feeling more alert, rather than, you know, sometimes you learn by night and you're half falling asleep, then what you learn then. So sometimes you have, like the Rambam says, you're going to get Keser Torah if you use your nights properly and learn. But on the other hand, sometimes it's at night, you're half asleep, and then you learn something and it doesn't really stay with you. So then Reb Zera is saying, in that case, then better to learn it by day when you're feeling sharper. Also in this connection, Amrei Brate de Rav Chista le Rav Chista, Rav Chista's daughter one time says to him, Loi by night, he was learning Torah by night. She asked him, Loi boy mar menam puta, Rebbe, don't you want to sleep a little bit? Amalah, so he says to her, Hash to osu yoyma da arich yuktini, soon there are going to come the days that are long and short, meaning Rashi says, after 120, there's going to be a long time in the caver. So there's going to be a long time to sleep. Uktini, which are short, they're not times when you can be oisik b'torah b'mitzvahs, because that's for olam hazeh, not for olam haba. And then v'ninum tova, and then we're going to be sleeping plenty. In other words, I don't want to waste the time that I have here during my lifetime. I don't want to waste it. I don't want to waste any more than necessary of it on sleep. I'd rather spend it learning Torah. There's a couple of other explanations. One of them being that he's saying, again, like Tosfos says over here, that there's a difference between summer nights and winter nights as far as what to spend on Torah versus what to spend on sleeping. So he's saying that soon there's going to come the summer nights and those are going to be short, and I'll be able to sleep then. But during the winter nights, it's more important for me to spend a large amount of it learning Torah. The Rambam, in fact, puts it in Hilchos Talmud Torah that it's enough for a person to sleep for 8 hours a night, and then therefore, so if the night is longer than that, he should be spending it learning Torah. There are actually achronim that talk about, on the face of it, you don't find the average person doesn't necessarily need 8 hours of sleep. There is, in fact, someone once sent me a clip of the Rebbe discussing this by somebody by dollars. Where the Rebbe referenced something, I think in Prima Godim or something in the back of Shulchan Aruch, that says that maybe the 8 hours are actually 8 hours spread out over 2 days. In other words, 4 hours per night. Whatever the case, the point is that, you know, there's a certain amount, the person needs a certain amount of sleep in order to be able to function, but the person shouldn't be spending too much time on it. The night was made for more important purposes. They say a vort about some great Talmud Chacham, I don't remember who, that he would sleep in little bits. He'd sleep a little bit, then he'd wake up and learn, then he'd sleep another little bit and then wake up and learn. And they asked him, how do you manage with that? He says, you know, the same way as you have some people eat quicker than others and you have some people that learn quicker than others, the same way I sleep quicker than others. Okay. Onward, the Gemara continues. Amar of Nachmitzchok, Anan Poile Di Yimami Anan. We are daytime workers. In other words, again, if you have this question of when is it better to learn Torah? During the daytime when your head is clearer, or during the night rather than spending it on too much sleep. So he's saying, sort of Nachum Yitzchok is saying, we work by day. And then we focus on learning Torah by day. There's the famous Chassidish Avot. It's brought in Hayom Yom. It goes back to the Tzemach Tzedek, that it also means on a deeper level, Anan Poyle Di Mami Anan, that Yom is Ur, and it means our job in this world is, our job is to bring light, is to bring light of Elokus into the world. The Gemara says, Rab Acha Bar Yaakov Yosef Ufara. Rab Acha Bar Yaakov would borrow and pay back, meaning he would have a kvius that he's going to learn X amount of prakim on a certain day. So usually he would do it by day, which is the right time to do it. But sometimes, Rashi explains, sometimes during the day he'd be busy earning parnasa, so then he'd make it up by night. So like he'd borrow time from the day and then pay it back by night. So that's another way of doing it. More on the topic of the frame of mind davening. Amar Abulazar, habamin aderech ayispalo shloshi yamim. If a person has come home from a trip, he shouldn't daven for the first 3 days. Again, because he's not in a calm frame of mind because of the tircha of the way. Again, this halacha doesn't apply nowadays where we don't daven with that level of kavana. But Shenemar, as you have a pasuk, Ezra describes how he's coming with a group of Jews from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. The pasuk describes, he says, I gathered the people together by the river that flows to Ava. The pasuk continues, we camped there for 3 days. And then I started looking in and investigating among the people, and I didn't find any Levim. This is the famous thing that the Levim didn't want to come with Ezra for the second Beis Hamikdash, and Ezra counseled them by that they lose my sedition, that it goes to the Kohanim, or that my sedition can be given to Kohanim in addition to the Levim. Whatever. The point is that we see that during the first 3 days, he didn't have bina, he didn't have the ability to look carefully among the people and see who's there and who's not, because for the first 3 days, they were still in a bit of a confused frame of mind. So by the same token, then that's not the frame of mind to be davening in. So the Gemara tells, similarly, Avur de Shmuel ki osi b'urcha le'matzli tlasi yevi. So Avur de Shmuel did that. When he came home from a trip, he wouldn't daven for 3 days because he's not in the frame of mind yet to daven. There's a few different gersois and a few different explanations over here. It can mean only if the trip was 3 days long or longer, would he not daven afterwards, but a shorter trip wouldn't distract him so much, so he'd be able to. It could mean the other way around, that the first 3 days while he's on the road, he wouldn't daven because he's still getting used to the trip, but after that he gets more used to it, and then he would. There's a few different explanations. The Gemara continues, Shmuel le'matzli b'beisa de'ispe shechra. Shmuel would not daven in a house where there was beer, because the smell of the beer would make him feel drunk. And as we said before, you're not supposed to daven when you're drunk. Rapapa, like Matzli Bebe said, the Ispe Harrisona, Rapapa similarly would not daven in a house where there was fried fish, because the smell of it would bother him. So in Halacha, it mentions this in Shulchan Aruch. There are certain smells that you're not allowed to objectively daven around them, where there's smell where there's human waste around, or certain kinds of animal waste, etc. But you'll also have, if there's a certain kind of smell that distracts a person and makes him unable to concentrate, then he shouldn't daven, and then that's going to depend individually on the person, like beer for Shmuel or fried fish for the papa, then he shouldn't daven in such a place either, because you have to try to remove anything that will distract you in order to be able to daven properly. Right. Gemara continues. More about wine. Amar Rav Chanina, kol hamispata b'yeinoy, a person who is convinced using wine. In other words, that you're asking him to do something, and then when you give him some wine to drink, then he's in a nicer frame of mind and he's willing to do that. Such a person, yesh b'midas koina, he has something of Hashem's midas then in him. Because we see Hashem acted the same way, kabyachol. Shenem of ayorach Hashem asriach anichoyach v'goyma. What do you have after the mabul? After the mabul, noyach brought korbanos, and it says that Hashem, so to speak, smelled the sweet smell of the korbanos and said, I'm not going to ever destroy the world of the mabul. We just said before that Shmuel wouldn't daven in a place where there was beer because the smell of it would make him drunk. So you see, in other words, so to speak, like Hashem smelled the smell of the korbanos, and that kavyachol made him more willing to be nice to Noach and to the rest and to everybody and to all the rest of the people and the animals and all. So we see that a person who acts in that way, yesh b'midas koinei. Marsha says differently. It means Like this, what hamispata b'yeno means, so you might have, you know, you're asking a person a favor, so you give him some wine of your own. But you might also have where instead you invite him to a party where the wine that's being served is his own wine. Is that going to make him more? Is that going to make him more amenable to listening to what you have to say? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, he might say, you know, it's one thing if you spend your own money on this party. The fact that you're spending my money, why should I care? If nevertheless he's willing to still be amenable and then do what the other person wants, that shows that he's acting like the Eibishter. Because what happened when Noach brought the Korbanos? Everything in the world belongs to Hashem after all. So it's not like Noach is not giving Hashem anything that he doesn't already have. And still Hashem accepted that and said, Lo Yosef, that I'll never again destroy the world. So when a person acts that way, then it shows that he has some of Hashem's das in him, some of Hashem's midas. Continues the Gemara, Amar Rav Chanina, kolam es yashiv v'yenoi, a person who is calm when he drinks wine. In other words, exactly that. He drinks wine and doesn't confuse him, and it doesn't make him drunk or whatever. It makes him more able to concentrate. Al Derech, we had yesterday Rav Nachman said about himself that I dafka have to drink a revius of wine, and then that makes me better able to understand the Torah. So when a person does that, yesh by das ein skenim, it shows that he has the das and the middah of the 70 skenim in him. Because yayin nitin ba'ayin osius, v'soid nitin ba'ayin osius. The word wine, yayin, is gematria 70. The word soid is also gematria 70. The nichnas yayin, yotza soid. So when the wine goes in, the secrets comes out. So this person shows that he's able to control his wine. He doesn't give out, he doesn't just blab out his secrets. Like many people when they get drunk will just say anything that comes into their head. They have no filter. So a person who still has that filter after he drank and is not giving away secrets that he shouldn't shows that he has the das of the 70 skenim. There's also a meaning in it also that it means that such a person who's able to give out secrets of Torah when he's drunk. You have a Gemara in Sanhedrin where Rebbe says about the sons of Reb Chiya, he says, give the young men some wine so that we'll hear secrets of Torah from them. So there it's the other way around. So you have a person, again, who knows what to do with wine. He knows what to reveal. He knows the secrets of Torah to reveal at that time and not whatever secrets are not appropriate to reveal. You have also, of course, from this that nichnas yayin yotza soid, and the connection between yayin and soid, we say that pnimiyas haTorah is compared to wine. That's based on this, because we're saying the secrets of Torah are related to wine. Okay, continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Chanin, lo nivra yayin el lanachem avelim ulashalam schar l'rashoyim. Wine was created only in order to comfort avelim and in order to pay off rashoyim. Like this, they drink and they're happy and they get their schar in this world. Shenema, as a pasuk in Mishlei says, tnu shecho la'oved. The pasuk says, give shecho, which means strong drink, to the oved, to the one who's going to be lost, meaning the Rasha. And the pasuk continues, the Gemara is not quoting the second half of the pasuk, but the second half of the pasuk goes, v'yayin l'more nafesh, and wine to those who are bitter in spirit, meaning avelim. So we see that wine is appropriate, is used to reward the Rashaim. In fact, the word shecher is also like the word schar. So the oved, the Rasha gets his schar in that way. And also it's given to more nafesh, to people who are bitter. There's a Gemara in Ksubas that mentions that the minhag used to be that in a Beis HaOvel, they would have the Ovel drink 10 cups of wine at the Suda, and that would help him forget some of his avelos. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Chanan bar Papa, kol she'en yayin nishbach b'sech Beis HaKamayim, a person where wine is not poured out in his house like water, ein b'chlal bracha, has not reached the ultimate level of bracha. Meaning, Rashi says, even if he's rich in other things, but the fact that wine is not being poured out freely in his house like water shows he hasn't reached the ultimate level of bracha yet. Now, obviously, it doesn't mean that you pour out the wine and waste it, but it means, among other things, for example, that he's machnis oirach, and he doesn't mind how much wine is being drunk, as if he's as willing to give it away as water. It means when he's pouring people's cups, he pours them out generously, not like, you know, usually you pour water, you pour plenty. There's plenty of water to go from. So if a person does, you know, you're not usually stingy when you pour people cups of water. So the same way, if he's not stingy and when it comes to pouring cups of wine, there's also from here comes the minhag that we have by Havdalah, especially of letting the wine overflow over the cup. We don't just fill up the cup exactly to the brim. We let it overflow a little bit as a simon bracha, that's based on our Gemara over here. Shenema, uveira cheslach mocha b'esmei mecha. We have a pasuk and that says Hashem will bless your in Parshas Mishpatim, Hashem will bless your bread and your water. Now, the simple meaning of it, of course, means exactly that. It means that you'll eat bread and you'll drink water, and that'll heal you of that'll be enough to heal you of any problems that you have. As the pasuk continues, but the Gemara is darshaning that the word water over here doesn't literally mean water. It has to be that the water we're talking about in the pasuk over here is similar to bread. Bread is something that you're able to buy with ma'aser sheni money, as we learned back at the beginning of the third parak. You're able to buy in order to buy something with ma'aser sheni money, it has to be something that grows directly or indirectly from the ground. Bread is in that category. Af mayim shenikach b'kesef ma'aser. So the water that's talking about in the pasuk also has to be something that could be bought with ma'aser sheni money. Water itself you can't buy with ma'aser sheni money. We learned at the beginning of the third parak, chutz min ha'mayim min ha'melach. So therefore, mayim nihu yayin. So what kind of liquid must we be talking about? A liquid that can be bought with ma'aser sheni money, namely wine. V'kakori le'mayim. And the pasuk is calling it water, implying this idea that there's an association between having a lot of wine and pouring it out like water. So therefore, and the pasuk says, uveirach, so I nishpach b'beisek hamayim, so if wine is being poured out in his house like water, freely, ikka bracha, then it shows that he's in the category of the bracha, uveirach, es lach mocha ves meimecha. The iloi loi, and if not, then not. Finishing off on this part, on the sugya about wine, the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Loi, b'shloisha dvarim adam nikar, there are three things where you can tell what a person really is, whether he's a good person, based on how he acts in the following three things, b'koisai, over kisai, over kasai. In his cups, meaning Rashi says, when he drinks wine or mashka or whatever, is he calm or does he become one of these wild kind of people? B'kisai, as far as his purse, his wallet, meaning does he do business with other people honestly? And bekasai, if he doesn't get angry more than he should. There's a lot of different explanations on this. Among them is bekasai, that when a person is angry, we see what the person really is then. How does a person behave? When he's angry, really tells everybody, so he's lacking some of his usual filters, then we see how the person really is. So these are the kind of things. Marsha points out that these three things represent, among others, you have tov la shamayim, tov la brias, and tov for yourself. So b'koisa represents tov for himself. For himself, how does he act when he's drunk? Over kiso refers to tov labrius, how does he act as far as his business with other people? Is he honest? And over kaso, if when a person gets angry, we know kolakoyas kilo over davadazara. So if he controls himself in his anger, then it shows that he's tov lashamayim. He also points out you have those three kinds of good in the world. You can talk about things that are objectively good, you can talk about things that are tasty. Orev, it's called in Hebrew, and you have things that are useful, moyu. So each of these three things represents a different aspect of good like that. How he is when he drinks wine represents orev, how he is in business is moyu, is how useful he is, and how he is when he gets angry, that tells us about tov, that tells us about the essential goodness that he has. The Amri Lei, after Sachkoi, some say there's a fourth way you can tell what a person really is based on his laughter. The style, you have some people, you know how you have some people like rolling on the floor laughing, and it's like a low class kind of thing to do, versus you have other people that laugh in a more refined way. You have when a person is very happy, how they act. Some people throw off all restraints and others not, etc. So you have that kind of idea also that you can tell what a person really is based on that. Worth telling, by the way, a short story in this connection that I once read about Rav Henkin, who was one of the big rabbanim, passed away in the 1970s, one of the big American rabbanim, that late in life he had Alzheimer's, and unfortunately you have some people who have that, will just blurt out any random thing they want, and not always are they such good things. With him, there were two halachas that he had argued on with the other chachamim of that, with the other rabbanim of that period, or Moshe Feinstein and others, He never made a big deal out of his opinion, because okay, if the other rabbanim are against him, then he wasn't going to publicize it. But now when he had Alzheimer's and he's just, you know, again, a person just says whatever comes to mind, those were the two things he kept on saying over and over. So you see what an agile person he was, that those are the things, what comes out of him when he has no filters is those things, those halachas, rather than, unfortunately, you have the kind, sometimes other people in that situation would be likely to say less proper things. Getting back now to halachas, where we're still in the middle of discussing the halachas of schiras rishus from a goy, where again we said at the beginning of the perek that if a goy is living in a chotzer with Jews, according to the Meir, even one Jew, and according to the Blazim and Yaakov, only if it's two Jews or more, then you can't make an Eruv unless you do schiras rishus. You rent the premises from the goy, at least symbolically. And we said that the idea is that way it's going to be a hassle. The goy may not be willing to do that. That way you won't live long term with a goy and end up learning from his ways. So now more on that topic. The Gemara says, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rab, Yisrael v'nochri b'pnimis v'yisrael b'chatzayna. Suppose you have two chatzeres, where one of them opens up, the inner one only opens up into the outer one. It has no direct exit to Rosh Hashanah. And then the outer one opens to Rosh Hashanah or to the Mavri or whatever. So the people who live in the inner chotzer have to cross through the outer chotzer in order to be able to go in and out of their chotzer. So suppose you have then, there's a Jew and a goy living in the inner chotzer together. And then you have in the outer chotzer, there's only one yid and nobody else. So now, do we say that the yid and the goy who live in the inner chotzer, are they considered members of the outer chotzer because they always have to pass through it? Or maybe not, because after all, they do live in their own chotzer. So the Gemara says, so Rav Yehuda tells us, Maisa ba Maisa lifnei Rebbe v'Osar. Such a case was brought to Rebbe, and he said it's Osir, meaning that the person, the one yid living in the outer chotzer, is not able to carry in his chotzer until he does schiras rishus from the goy in the inner chotzer. V'lifnei Reb Chiya v'Osir, and the case was also brought to Reb Chiya, and he also asked it. It doesn't necessarily mean the same case, by the way. Once a Rav paskins that something is also, you're not allowed to ask a different Rav for a different psak. It could mean that just that there were two different cases. One person with such a case came to Rebbe, and a different person came to Reb Chiya. So the Gemara tells, Yosef Rabba and Rab Yosef v'shilei pirka de Rav Sheshes. One time, Rabba and Rab Yosef were sitting in the yeshiva at the end of Rav Sheshes' shiur. The Yosef Rav Sheshes v'kamar, Rav Sheshes was saying, Kiman omra Rav l'shmaite, this statement of Rav, that it's also for the yid in the outer chotzer to carry unless he does schiras rishus, who would that be like? When Rav reports that would be Kirab Meir, that would be according to Rav Meir in our Mishnah, which if that's the case would mean that that's not the halacha, because the Rav Meir says that you don't need two Jews in the chotzer, one Jew and one goy is enough to aser. So this would be according to Rav Meir. And the Gemara says, Kaukish Rabba Reshe, Rabba nodded his head as if to say, I agree. This is only according to the Meir. According to the Elazar ben Yaakov, there wouldn't be a problem. But Amar Rabbi Yosef says, what's going on over here? Tre Gavri Ravri Rabbanon, two great people like these Chachamim, Rav Sheshes and Rabba, Litu Bahai Milsa, how could they possibly make a mistake on such a thing? If this statement that it's osur for the yid to carry was according to the mayor, lama li Yisrael b'chatzayna, why even bother mentioning the Yisrael in the outer chotzer? According to the mayor, just the fact that you have one yid and one goy in the inner chotzer, they can't carry in the inner chotzer either, unless the yid does schiras rishus. So why even bother mentioning the Yisrael in the outer chotzer? You're going to answer, okay, it so happened that that was the actual case, that there were two chatzeres, one that opened into the other, and you had a yid and a goy in one and a yid in the other. Doesn't necessarily mean that the halacha would be any different if it was only one chotzer with a yid and a goy in it. Can't be. Because we know they also asked Rav a shayla, leaving aside for the moment the person living in the outer chotzer, what about the yid living in the inner chotzer? Is he allowed to carry within his own chotzer without doing schiras rishus? Now again, an eruv he obviously doesn't have to make because there's no other yid over there to make an eruv with. So, but does he have to do schiras rishus in order to be able to carry from his house to the chotzer? And he tells them it's mutter. So obviously, therefore, Rav is only saying it's osur in the outer one, because in the outer one, you have one yid who lives in a house there. The other Yid who always passes through it on his way in and out of his own chatzar. So therefore, in effect, you have two Jews who have control over the outer chatzar. But Rav says that the Yid living together with the Goy in the inner chatzar is allowed to carry. That's clearly not according to the Meir, because according to the Meir, he would be also unless he did Schiras Rishus. So obviously, therefore, we can't now, if Rav is reporting what Rebbe did and what Reb Chiya did, it's not just that he's reporting, it's not just he wants to tell us Ma'aseh Shehaya Kachaya, it means he holds that's the halacha. Well then, how would that work? If that's according to the Meir, if Rav himself is saying that it's mutter, like Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. So the Gemara says, Ve'ela Ma'aseh Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. So what are you going to say then? The original case involving the two chatzeres is according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, and you're still saying then that Rebbe and Reb Chiya saying it's also would be even according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, because we would consider that the outer chatzer, so we'd say, fine, the inner chatzer only has one yid, he's allowed to carry there, but the outer chatzer has two Jews, one who lives there and one who always passes through. So you're going to say that's according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov. The problem is, why? But Reb Elazar ben Yaakov says you need to have two Jews, not just two Jews. He uses the expression, you need to have two Jews that are assering one on the other. Meaning, in other words, that, and now in this case, now you have like this. We're going to have a machloikas later on towards the end of the perek. We touched on it briefly before. We have a machloikas Reb Akiva and the Chachamim. Suppose in a case like this, let's say, for example, forgetting for a second about the matter of Jews and Goyim. Let's say you have people in the inner chatzar and people in the outer chatzar. So what happens? You have, let's say, you have many Jews living in the inner chatzar and many Jews living in the outer one, let's say. Suppose that each of them made a separate Eruv. So that means the Jews in the inner chatzar are now able to carry in their chatzar because they made an Eruv. That's called regel hamuteres b'mekoyma, that they're allowed to carry in their place, in their chatzar. The question is, does that create a problem, though, when they walk through the outer chatzar because they didn't join in an Eruv with the people of the outer chatzar? You have machlokes Reb Akiva and the Chachamim. The Chachamim say it's still not a problem. Since they're muter b'mekoyma, then they don't ask Shaloi b'mekoyma when it's not their place, namely in the outer chatzar. Rabbi Akiva holds that they do aser, and therefore they need to make one joint eruv between the two chatzeres. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is saying that you need two Yisraelim oistrim zalzeh, but pashtos he holds like the Rabbanon, that in a case like this where you have an inner and an outer chatzar, and they're allowed to carry in their inner chatzar, then there's not a problem with the outer chatzar. So going back to our case over here, you have one yid and one goy in the inner chatzar. Again, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that doesn't create a problem, and the yid is allowed to carry in his chatzar without schiras rishus, because there's only one yid and one goy, and he says you only have a problem when there's two. He's not assuring on the outer one because, again, he's mutter b'mekoyma. He's allowed to carry in his inner chatzar, and therefore he shouldn't be causing a problem for the outer chatzar. So then, according to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, why would the outer chatzar be a problem either? So the answer is, okay, elak Reb Akiva. So, okay, are you going to answer maybe that Rav holds like Reb Akiva? Where he says that Taka, even though the Yid is allowed to carry in the inner chatzar, but still because he didn't make an Eruv with the outer chatzar, then therefore you have an outer chatzar that has a reshus of two people, and therefore it's considered Oistrin Zealzeh. And we're saying, therefore, that because of that, the fact that there's a Goy in the inner chatzar requires us to do Schiras Reshus. Rabbi Akiva says that even if you're mutter to carry in your own chatzar, but you can aser in a different chatzar if you regularly pass through it. Well then, if that's the scenario, lomali nachri, then why even bother mentioning the case that there was a goy involved? I feel Yisrael Nami. The same din, if we say according to Rabbi Akiva, the same din would apply. If you just had two yidden there, you had one yid in the inner chatzar, one in the outer, and according to Rabbi Akiva, even though the yid in the inner chatzar is mutter b'mekoyma, he's allowed to carry in his chatzar because there's nobody else to make an eruv with, but he would be oiser shalei b'mekoyma. There's no reason to mention the goy at all. So who is Rav holding like that? We're saying that we have this case where Davka, you have a yid and a goy in the inner chotzer and a yid in the outer one, and we're saying that only in that case it's also. It doesn't seem to work out according to the Meir. It doesn't seem to work out according to the Elazar ben Yaakov, and it doesn't seem to work out according to Reb Akiva. Because according to each one of them, the scenario doesn't have to be that way. According to the Meir. You don't need the outer chatzar at all. According to Reb Elazar ben Yaakov, if he holds like the Chachamim, then there's no issue here anyway. And according to Rabbi Akiva, you don't need the guy involved in order for there to have a, to have the situation. Amar of Huna Breid Rav Yeshua lo olam k'rab alaz ben Yaakov. So Rav Huna Breid Rav Yeshua says the answer is Rav does hold like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Ucha Rav Akiva, and he also holds like Rav Akiva. So he holds like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov that, again, that you need two Jews to have reshus in that chotzer for there to be a problem. He does hold like Rabbi Akiva that the fact that the yid in the inner chotzer walks through the outer chotzer is considered that he has reshus over that chotzer. The scenario we're talking about over here is where the two Jews did make an eruv. And therefore, so the fact that they made an eruv, that should have been good. Now he's not asuing on the other one. But v'taima de ikur nachri hu da asur. But because there was a goy involved over here, then therefore that cancels out the eruv. That cancels out the eruv because now again you can't make an eruv when there's a goy there unless you do schiras rishus. So that's why we need all three of them there. That's why we need the scenario. Dafka has to be there's a yid and another yid and a goy. Because that way you have, so the two of them, the yid in the inner chotzer and in the outer chotzer made an eruv together. So now, even according to Rabbi Akiva, there wouldn't be a problem, either of them carrying in their chatzeres. However, now that we have a goy involved and that messes up things, and now we need schiras rishus, is what Rav is telling us. If there hadn't been a goy there, then their tackle wouldn't have been a problem, because then you have the two Jews together made an eruv, and that would have been good enough.
And that's the halacha.
That's an interesting point, actually. When you ask, is that the halacha? Because the fact is, the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva about the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva on this matter of regal hamuteres b'mkayma seres shalay b'mkayma. So on the face of it, it sounds like what we're saying over here in the Gemara. If it's only according to Rabbi Akiva, it would mean then that it would mean it's not the final halacha. It would mean that the halacha would be, in fact, that maybe you wouldn't need schiras rishus because the yid in the inner chotzer doesn't have to have made an eruv with the yid in the outer chotzer anyway. On the other hand, the fact is this is brought in the Rambam and in Shulchan Aruch and other poskim. So apparently it is a libur d'hilchosa, and there is a good deal of discussion among Rishonim why that should be so. Maybe, in fact, in a case like this, maybe to this extent, the halacha would be like Rabbi Akiva, that when you have these two people are making an eruv, then a goy being there messes it up unless they do schiras or shus. Maybe, in fact, had they not made an eruv between them in the first place, then maybe taka there wouldn't be a problem. There's a good deal of discussion about that. Well, so that's one way of understanding it, is that in fact, if the two of them do make an Eruv, so again, if you have multiple Jews and multiple Jews living in the inner Chotzer and in the outer Chotzer, no question that if each of them makes an Eruv for themselves, they can carry in their own Chotzer, and they're going to have to do Schiras or Shus from the Goy that lives among them, and the fact that the people from the inner Chotzer are walking through the outer Chotzer, the Halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva, they don't ask, so they didn't. The fact that they didn't join in the Eruv doesn't hurt anything. But maybe we're saying that if the two groups do make a joint Eruv with the intention of they want to be able to carry in each other's Chatzeres as well, then they would in fact need to do, even if you only have one yid in each one, then you would in fact need to do schiras rishus, because the fact is you have two Jews joining in an eruv over here, and two Jews can't join in an eruv when there's a goy involved. Okay, so to finish off, so now Rabbi Elazar asked Rav a related question. What about, till now we were talking about you have a yid and a goy in the inner chotzer and a yid in the outer one. What if it's the other way around? Yisrael v'nochri b'chitzayna, b'yisrael b'pnimis. What if you have a yid and a goy living in the outer chotzer, and a yid living in the inner chotzer alone? Mahu, what would be the din then? What as far as schiras rishus, would we say hosam taima? The reason why in the first case we would say that you need that, why you would need to do schiras rishus is Mishum de shchiach de dayur, because it's common to have such an arrangement. It's common for a And like this, we said at the beginning of the perek that a yid is not usually going to live alone together with a goy in the same chatzar because the goy is choshed on shvichos damim. That was the reason why we said why Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov only says there's only a problem if you have two Jews living over there, because then they're going to figure there's safety in numbers and they're going to live together with the goy and eventually they may learn from his ways. But in that case, we could say from the shchiach the dyer, you could argue that a case like that, a yid and a goy in the outer in the inner chatzar and a yid living alone in the outer chatzar is a common way for a yid to live, because the mirsas nachri, he figures he's not afraid of the goy, he's not afraid of the possible shvichas damim that the goy did. The mirsas nachri, because on the contrary, the yid who lives in the inner chatzar figures the goy is going to be afraid to kill me, because of a sabo, he's going to think to himself, hash to osi Yisrael, eventually the Yisrael who lives in the outer chotzer is going to come. V'omol Yisrael dehaba gabach hecha, where is the Yisrael who lived by you? I haven't seen him going in and out. The only way for him to get out to Rosh Hasharabim is through my chotzer, and I haven't seen him lately. What's going on? So therefore, maybe the goy is going to be afraid to try anything funny. Aval hacha, but in our scenario, Rebbe Lozo's scenario, where it's the other way around, the yid and the goy live in the outer chazer, the goy may not be so afraid of that. Aminale, nafakazale, the goy can easily tell the other yid in the inner chazer, what do you mean? He left. Okay, you didn't see him. You live in the inner chazer. You don't know what's going on in the outer chazer. Meanwhile, the goy will have actually killed the yid, and he's not afraid to do that. So maybe, therefore, to begin with, the yid knows that he's in danger living in the outer chotzer, and he's not going to do that in the first place. Or maybe even in this kind of case, the goy would be afraid to harm the yid, and therefore the yid can feel safe to live there, and therefore, again, you need schiras rishos. The sava hashti osi yisrael v'chazili, because after all, he figures the yid from the inner chotzer at any point may walk through my chotzer and see me harming the other yid. Al derech like you have by kashrus, for example, where we know that's enough to have many times. It's enough to have a guy over there nichnes v'yotze, because the goy then is afraid to try anything underhanded, because the yid may catch him. So maybe the same thing over here. Amale. So Rav answered him with a lashon haposik, ten lachacham v'yechkam oid. You give something to a chacham, and he will become more of a chacham. In other words, like you tell a person, a chacham, you can tell him something, and he'll be able to derive from it something else, the right thing to do. So the same thing over here. In other words, you know the first din, it's also the same way over here, and you need to do schiras rishos. The same way over here, yes, it is in fact also without schiras rishos, because yes, your second possibility is correct. The goy may not be so inhibited, and therefore the yid may feel free to live in that outer chotzer together with the goy and not worry about his personal safety, and therefore because of that, you're back to that it's a normal way that a person may live, and therefore the chachamim are going to require schiras rishos precisely to discourage him from living there, because we don't want him to learn from the goy's ways.
So there's two aspects of it. One is danger from the goy from in the inner chatzer, and the other one is not to learn from a goy in the outer chatzer, basically.
Right. Well, so what we're saying is you have two things that sort of counteract each other. On the one hand, a single yid knows that he's in danger from a single goy in the same chazer, and therefore he's not likely to live there for any length of time. Therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says it's a milsa d'lo shchicha, it's an uncommon thing for a yid to live with one goy, and therefore the chachamim have no need to make a gzeir on it. When you have two or more Jews, where then there's not the concern for their personal safety, because there's safety in numbers. Then on the other hand, you have the problem that the Jews may live there long term with the goy and learn from his ways, so therefore the chachamim want to discourage that. What we're saying over here is whether you have a goy and a yid in the inner chatzer and a yid in the outer one, or vice versa, a yid in the inner one and a yid and a goy in the outer one, either way we're saying that there's concern that the Jews are going to get too comfortable living over there, not be afraid for their safety, and then end up learning from the goy. So in both cases, we want schiras rishos in order to avoid that problem, that they don't continue living with the goy long term and end up learning from him. Yeah. Okay. To be continued tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Shkech.
Shkech, everyone.